This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Let's say you were enticed by those Super Bowl ads, that you were moved to score some cryptocurrency of your own. What can you actually, buy with it? Not a lot, at least not consistently. Think about walking around with an early American Express card. So instead, many crypto-rich are spending their dime on a one-of-a-kind digital artwork, an NFT or non-fungible token. It may not look unique, but its singularity is coded in the digital spreadsheet known as the blockchain. The Bored Ape Yacht Club is a collective that boasts some of the most expensive NFTs.
I like those apes. What are they? They're angry apes? What kind of apes were they? Bored apes.
Bored apes.
And yes, the images actually depict blasé primates wearing different outfits. The cheapest Bored Ape NFT goes for north of $260,000. Here's Jimmy Fallon and Paris Hilton showing off their bounty on The Tonight Show.
You taught me what's up, and then I bought an ape.
I got an ape, too, because I saw you on the show with Beeple, and you said you got a MoonPay, so I went and I copied you and did the same thing.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
That's your ape.
It's really cool.
The Bored Ape NFT collection, less than a year old, started this month with a market cap of about $2.8 billion, and their parent company, Yuga Labs, is supposedly valued at something like $4 or $5 billion. But until this month, no one knew the identities of the people behind the Bored Apes. That changed when Katie Notopoulos, a senior technology reporter at BuzzFeed, reported the names of Bored Ape Yacht Club's pseudonymous founders, Greg Solano and Wiley Aronow.
I originally started looking into this because there had been this conspiracy theory floating around that the imagery in the Bored Apes secretly had Nazi symbolism and had all these sort of nefarious clues behind it. And it's hard to know whether this is a crazy theory that is someone reading into stuff that's not really there, or if maybe it is, if you don't know who the people are behind this.
That's not to say that Greg Solano and Wiley Aronow have any red flags or are neo-Nazis or otherwise unsavory characters. They just didn't have names.
Right. It's hard for the founders of a company to answer questions about their personal integrity if no one knows who they are. It's very common for people in the world of NFTs and crypto to not use their real identity. For the most part, that's people doing individual transactions and just trading stuff. But it would be against the norms of our society for any $5 billion company to have a secret CEO. The public deserves to know who is behind a business that big.
Notopoulos found their real names, which were publicly listed, through a couple of simple LexisNexis searches. But outrage ensued after the BuzzFeed article was published. One critic found a photo of Notopoulos as a child online and turned that into an NFT, titled, "Voted Most Likely to Be a Failed Journalist, Katie Notopoulos." People sent threatening messages saying they'd uncovered the addresses of her home and of her family members. And the CEO of Yuga Labs released a video claiming that Notopoulos' article endangered the founders.
People who have made a lot of money in crypto
and it's attracted some nefarious characters. Releasing their identities was very, very dangerous for them and their families.
Never mind that nefarious actors could have easily obtained the publicly available names themselves. The Bored Ape Yacht Club also accused Natopolis of doxing them.
Right. And I think people being anti-doxing is a good thing. But doxing has the connotation that it is releasing public information, not just someone's name, but their address and other contact information specifically to intimidate or harm them. I assumed, well, everyone knows that this is just straightforward business journalism. This is the way things are. But those rules are not necessarily generally understood by everyone. It's possible that in a few years, it'll be totally normal for $5 billion companies that are running NFTs and cryptos to have pseudonymous CEOs. It's, at this point, it's not normal. Their true identities have public value and news value.
The misogynistic, semi-anonymous, organized online action directed at Natopolis and BuzzFeed is reminiscent of another online battle waged earlier in this century, one that served as a great leap forward in the organization of our broader culture war, called Gamergate, a point picked up by Maxwell Strawn, a features writer and editor at Motherboard on Vice.com, who tracked the backlash to Natopolis's reporting in a piece called Bored Apes, BuzzFeed, and the Battle for the Future of the Internet.
The tactics of Gamergate ended up often becoming finding controversial tweets in a reporter's history, digging those up and trying to make them look bad and see if their employer would take action. We saw a little bit of that with Katie's story, but what we saw here more was the next generation of that. People within the crypto space who feel that one of their own was wrong, saying, we're going to band together and try and take down this news organization. There was a founder of a crypto recruiting firm who suggested the Bored Ape community could pool its money together, sort of complete a Gordon Gekko-style hostile takeover.
You wrote that the reaction to the BuzzFeed story feels like the opening salvo in a new chapter in the battle over internet anonymity.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot more companies like BAYC, for short, come around in the next couple years. People who want to enjoy the benefits of running a big company without the accountability that comes with it. Mm. A core tenet of journalism, as I know that you know, is accountability. And so Katie saw a company that was about to receive hundreds of millions in funding from one of the biggest venture firms in the world and believed that it was in the public interest to find out who these people were.
Let's talk about one Silicon Valley buzzword that constantly rears its head in your article to refer to this new chapter of the internet, right? Web 3. What's the difference between Web 2 and Web 3?
Web 2 is when giant internet companies were built, companies like Facebook, Google, and Twitter, companies that created businesses by mining your data and using the content that you created for their profit. And one of the core concepts of Web3 is that you will be the money maker. You won't make your TikToks for free. Web3 will figure out a way to have you get paid for them. I think anyone can support that goal. The issue is how feasible it is and whether that theory will become a reality.
The term, it's traced back to the co-founder of the Ethereum blockchain, right? Gavin Wood?
Right.
He wrote an online treatise some years back in which he sketched out a vision for a post-Edward Snowden web where privacy was paramount.
Wood looked at what Edward Snowden showed the world and decided that a core tenet of the internet needed to be privacy, which included encrypted communication through identity-based pseudonyms, in which you can live your entire life online without anyone ever figuring out who you are.
It really is a substitute identity, not just a false name.
Right.
There's also the argument that pseudonymity is an equalizer of sorts. But you wrote every member of Forbes 2021 crypto billionaires list is a man. A third of them attended Stanford or Harvard. Of the 12 listed, only one isn't white. In practice, How inclusive are crypto or Web3 communities?
It's a good question. It's a difficult question to answer. Pseudonymity offers a lot of hope for people, but it also offers a bit of a cover. You can see that in the crypto space more broadly, where wealth is supposed to be democratized and spread out, and we're supposed to have a fairer, more communal version of capitalism, when in fact, the evidence shows that it's re-centralized wealth, maybe even to a higher degree than the American economy was doing before cryptocurrency ever entered our vernacular.
That was a really fascinating part of your piece. You quoted Tim O'Reilly, who coined the term Web 2.0, who said that the system coming into existence tends to mirror the one that came before it. Blockchain turns out to be the most rapid re-centralization of a decentralized technology that I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah. Like a lot of technologies, I think crypto offered people a lot of hope. But the unfortunate reality is that it is a unregulated, hyper-capitalist marketplace. And it's not being born in a vacuum. It's being born in the 21st century modern world. There was a loud argument that crypto will democratize finance and allow a lot of people avenues through which to generate wealth that weren't available to them before. And I think it remains to be seen how true that is. But what we can say is that a lot of the previously wealthy have become extraordinarily wealthy, or the people that are becoming wealthy are the people that would normally become wealthy anyway. People who are white males who come from good schools and probably were well on their way regardless.
The top 10% of NFT holders own 4/5 of the market's value, you wrote, and 0.01% of Bitcoiners hold 27% of all the circulating coins. And as you've noted, being pseudonymous has caused a lot of the most troubling behavior in these crypto spaces. You wrote that, quote, one of the hallmarks of the new economy has been so-called rug pulls, in which the creator of a cryptocurrency project pools together people's money for some higher cause or not, and then disappears with it all. I mean, I figured blockchain, you'd be able to track these guys down, but no.
Well, there is a public ledger with blockchain. The issue is that while the ledger is public, who those people are is more difficult to deduce. So like you said, with rug pulls, which are becoming an increasingly common fraud in cryptocurrency, someone creates a new cryptocurrency and says, get in early. You know, you may have missed out on Bitcoin, but you could get on the Maxwell coin early. We're going to sell them off Monday at 4 p.m. Not only that, the money we generate is going to be used for a good cause. And we're going to allow people with not that much money to benefit from the future spoils. This is a real example that recently occurred. Everyone goes, great. You know, I've always wanted to get in the real estate market. And if I can do so for just a couple dollars, all the better. Everyone pools their money together. Everyone is excited. And then suddenly that person disappears with all the money, selling it on the blockchain and disappearing. And it is pretty concerning.
You mentioned that in a recent instance, a Web3 architect was able to hide past financial crimes by remaining anonymous until they were exposed.
These exposures can happen, but they are difficult. The question to ask is, are we going to want a world in which we need to do the legwork to figure out who these people are and oftentimes figure out who they are after it's too late? Or do we want a world where the people who found projects like these are easily Googleable at a minimum? And, you know, I think there's downsides to everyone being easily Googleable. I don't mean to make it seem like these are easy ethical questions to answer one way or the other. I just think that they are questions that we should begin to consider now, as opposed to 5 years from now, when all of these companies and this space more broadly will be much bigger.
You write that Web3 has, quote, tried to position itself and largely succeeded at positioning itself as a collection of good guys pushing toward a fairer, more communal form of internet capitalism. But the reaction in some quarters to the BuzzFeed story was a dark turn. What did you mean by that? What did the backlash to Katie's reporting signify for you?
The stated values of Web3 are commendable. Creating a fairer version of the internet where people's data is not profited off of by some mega corporation is a good goal. And I do believe that a lot of people are trying to solve some real issues that we've dealt with over the last 10 to 20 years on the internet. What I think what we saw with the BuzzFeed story is that there are other sides of this story that are starting to come out. And one of them is that people in the Web3 community broadly, again, really, really see the world in a sort of us versus them mentality. There are people who are pro-crypto and there are people who are anti-crypto. There are people who are pro-Web3 and there are people that are anti-Web3. And I think we really started to see that it's not just, oh, let's create a better world, but also, if you're not with us, you're against us, and we will take you on. And we can pool our money and our collective rage towards political ends or economic ones.
You said it's important to ask, is this the kind of world we want to move toward? You know, if Facebook started in 2021, it's possible Zuckerberg wouldn't have used his real name. And where would that leave us?
I thought that Facebook might be a useful example because here we have with the Bored Apes something that on its face is, you know, they're bored apes. There are silly images that everyone's seen floating around the internet, not of much consequence. People did say the same thing about Facebook when it was first started almost 20 years ago. Facebook was a place to share photos of your friends, and it turned into a sort of company that can alter national elections. We can never really know with these internet companies what will become of them. But the idea of keeping founders of powerful billion-dollar companies unknown to the public deserves scrutiny.
Maxwell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Maxwell Strong is a features writer and editor at Motherboard on Vice.com. Coming up, an American foil in Moscow. This is On the Media.